Along with Mitch Gallo, Joey Alfieri, Mitch Melnick until 7 o'clock. We had a pleasant surprise in the last 40 minutes. Steve Schutt is in town, leaving his more recent home state of Florida ahead of the mess. And he's on his way to the Maritimes. He's now he said he's a figurehead, not really a coach, but technically he's the coach of the Montreal Canadiens alumni heading to the Maritimes. And, of course, Steve Schutt was a radio analyst for the 1993 Montreal Canadiens with Ron Francis calling the play-by-play. That team, you just learned something, huh, Joey? That team will be honored prior to the Canadiens' home opener tomorrow night against the LA Kings. It's a pleasure every Wednesday at this time to welcome TSN hockey voice and so much more. Gord Miller, how are you?
I'm very well, Mitch. And you?
I'm good, thank you. When I say Steve Schutt, what do you think of?
Pure goal scorer.
Yeah.
Just an absolute pure goal scorer.
Yeah, I mentioned to him the best hand-eye coordination I've ever seen in front of the net.
And it wasn't he the one who said that I hated Scotty Bowman 364 days a year and then I got my Stanley Cup ring the other day?
That's the man. Oh, yeah. I noticed Ray Ferraro had to cancel yesterday because of two flights canceled as a result of what's going on?
Ray had a tough day yesterday, yes.
He did make it to Dallas, though, just in time for the broadcast, right?
Yes, he did.
So we'll talk to Ray tomorrow. So yes, you were going to say something, Gallo.
Going to say I didn't know it was such a tough day for Ray, but you know, listening to the broadcast on TSN or watching it, I should say, you wouldn't know because he still killed it.
Well, it was 11 goals in the game. That's what Ray likes, right, Gord?
You know, Ray just shrugs off adversity and carries right on. He has an even tempered disposition and just takes it all in stride.
Well, if Rod Francis, not Ron, Rod Francis were still here, he'd probably have the numbers to back us up about this, albeit early, higher pace of goals going in right now.
So through the same number of games, so there's been 41 games played, there have been 14 more goals scored this year than there were last.
Yeah, and I think the percentage I saw, 6.4...
6.3 to 6.
Right.
Per game.
And that's the highest since 93, 94.
Yeah. Now, it's really early, small sample. And goal scoring traditionally is higher in October than it dips in November and December. Interestingly enough, it comes back up in March and April when teams that are out of it bring up a lot of, you know, prospects and young players.
Well, one of the games that we just mentioned that is added to that, like, I can't remember, and it's, you know, we all have trouble remembering the older we get, but a defenseman with 10 points to share the scoring lead a week into the season?
Yeah.
Like Morgan Riley right now?
Yeah. And what's interesting, I think he only has three primary assists. He's got like six second assists playing on that, you know, with that dynamite group. Yeah, I mean, look, I mean, it's early days, and hey, listen, if this is a trend, bring it on. I hope it is. You know, Mitch, I started in the 80s in Edmonton. That Oilers team is the only one ever to score 400 goals in a season. They did it five straight years, 81, 82 to 85, 86. I was working the late sports then. I used to drive to the rink and park like three blocks away and walk through the snow and cold to watch two periods and then go back just because they were so exciting to watch. You didn't want to miss it. And these games are compelling. You know, I'm not saying it has to be, you know, tennis scores like 7-6, 6-4, whatever. But more offense is exciting. It's great to watch.
There's one of my all-time favorite teams was the 70-71 Bruins that the Canadiens knocked off. They just missed hitting 400. They scored 399 goals that year.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, part of it is, too, is that when a team gets ahead, if it's a high-scoring game, if it's a high-scoring league, the other team's not out of it.
So what do you make, and again, it's awfully early, but it's quite clear the Canadiens are playing differently. And you know, they're riding the speed wave and attacking and forechecking more aggressively and having two guys chase the puck. And it worked through training camp. I think they really liked what they saw when they ended up losing on home ice to Toronto because of a special teams battle, basically. But they controlled the play against Toronto in two straight exhibition games, and even this season opener, they controlled the play. It looks better. It certainly looks better. But one of the reasons, or one of the fallouts of this increase in pace, and the scoring is guys like Carl Alsner, right? Carl Alsner can't get into the lineup. He's got four more years to go on his contract. Are we seeing the slow move completely away from the one-dimensional stay-at-home defenseman the way we did with fighters?
Yes. I absolutely believe it. I think we saw it for the first time at the 2010 Vancouver Olympics when Steve Yzerman didn't take any defensive defenseman, right? Every guy he took was a guy that had point production in the past that could move the puck. And the same thing in 2014, even with the injuries they had, he took puck-moving defensemen. And I do believe that, you know, the one thing that with a salary cap that forces you to get as much efficiency out of your money spent as possible, that spending a lot of money on people that defend only is inefficient. But you can find people, if you want to have defensive defensemen, you can, but they should make $1.5 million or two. They shouldn't make four.
We're obviously keeping a close eye on that stuff. I think it's pretty obvious that sooner than later, we're going to have to make some decisions here, and they're not going to be easy ones. But, you know, we have to look again. I'm one of those coaches that looks at what group of guys will form the best team, and it takes a little bit of everything.
So the Canadians have Nicolas Deslauriers, who's been skating, and he's, about a week away or so, and they've got Sherbak hasn't gotten into a game, and Plekanec hasn't gotten into a game. Plekanec's not going anywhere, and De La Rose hasn't gotten into a game, and Alsner hasn't gotten into a game. And there's waivers required for – are you hearing anything around the league? Are there similar teams in a situation like this where they're
– Oh, lots of teams. Yeah, sure, because everyone's healthy at this time of the year, right? So for the most part, right? So in the case of Deslauriers, of course, he had the injury in the fight in the preseason, but – for the most part, teams are healthy, so they have, you know, five skaters. If you have a 23-man roster, you only dress 18. You've got five healthy scratches a night. And, you know, and Claude's right. Like, you got to monitor this because you can't let guys rot. They got to play sooner or later, right? You can't leave them on the shelf forever. But who do you take out? And it's a delicate balance because he's right. I mean, the coach's job is to win the next game. That's his priority, is to win the next game. And so the question becomes, okay, if Alsner's in, who's out? And does that move make it more likely for Montreal to have a better chance to win the game that night? And if it's not, then Alsner's got to keep sitting. But it becomes a very difficult situation. If a guy sits out, you know, 10, 12 games in a row, you can practice all you want. It's not the same as playing.
I guess, you know, looking at what happened with the Maple Leafs, they have the two goaltenders, right, McElhinney and Calvin Pickard. They get claimed off waivers, and then they were also, it looked like they were going to place Connor Carrick on waivers, but they pulled that move back at the last second to work out a deal with the Stars, and Carrick ends up in Dallas. Is that something that teams look at to try to at least make a trade as opposed to losing the guy on waivers?
Yeah, so they got a conditional seventh-round pick. Better than nothing, right? I mean, it's better than nothing. So, yeah, the one advantage to losing a player on waivers is if he goes back on, you get the first crack at claiming him back. I do think we spend a lot of time, and I guess it's part of the process, but whether it's with Olympic teams or with rosters, talking about seventh defensemen and 13th forwards and, you know, worrying about the guys at the bottom end of the roster, I don't think it makes that big a deal. I don't think it makes that big a difference, to be honest with you. You know, In this era, your big players carry you. Your big ticket players carry you. So, you know, whether Alsner's in or whether Sherbak's in or not, I don't think moves the needle that much. But it's a talking point for us, and obviously the team has to manage it. But at the end of the day, I don't think those players make an enormous difference to the team winning or not.
Short term, probably not. But long term, fans are looking, and De La Rose factors into this as well, Gord. Sure. You know, Sherbak was a former first round pick. He's only 22 years old, and De La Rose is a year older. He's a former second round pick. So the Canadians have invested in these guys.
Sure. And probably the reason Sparks made the Maple Leafs is he's 25 and was drafted by the team, and they've developed him, whereas McElhinney was 35. Is Sparks better than McElhinney right now? Probably not. Right, but no, you're right. You do have to balance that at some point. But at some point, De La Rose has to grab a job or not.
Well, one of the other teams that you're probably alluding to is Sam Bennett. He's not even playing center. He hasn't taken a face off. He played less than 10 minutes first couple of nights. All of a sudden, last night, he was up to 14 minutes, I think. So something is going on there, you'd think.
Yeah, hard to say. I mean, they had a 3-0 lead, you know. So, I mean, did they get more ice time because they're resting guys? It's hard to say. But, yeah, with Sam Bennett, when the coach looks at his lineup, he doesn't care where you were drafted or how much you make, right? He just cares, do you help the team win? And if you don't, he doesn't care if you're a first-round pick. He'll sit you out. Now, management gets involved and says, whoa, that's our first-round pick here. Let's be careful here. But, in the coach's mind, when he's putting together the power play or deciding who's playing on the top line, he's not thinking about your salary. He's thinking about who can help me win tonight. That's why management and coaches so often come into conflict, Mitch, because their objectives are different. Coaches think short-term. They want to win the next game. Management's thinking long-term in terms of, months and years.
Yeah, and you have an experienced coach in Bill Peters who never brought Carolina to the postseason, which was his mandate, and so now he's got a chance back home. Precisely to your point, it's a clean slate here.
Yeah, he has no relationship with Sam Bennett. He wasn't involved in drafting him. Wasn't there when he was picked. He just shows up and says, "You can help me, and you can," or "You can help me more than you can." And that's why in a lot of cases when a management or coaching change is made, for some players it's a breath of fresh air, but for others, you lose that connection with the guy who drafted you. All of a sudden you don't have that, that sort of that bond with him. And Mike Babcock pretty much said it, that Sparks has been with the organization. In other words, he won an American League championship with Kyle Dubas, who's now the GM.
Gord, I think the thing you said before about making sure players don't rot, that's interesting. And I think if the Canadians keep playing well, it's going to be an interesting dilemma because they're playing aggressive, they're playing fast, they're aggressive on the forecheck. And for the staff, it's like they're going to have to weigh how do we keep the lineup fresh? But if we do keep winning, I know it's a classy problem, but how do we rotate the roster and keep everybody fresh even though we're still winning? I think that's going to be interesting to see how they manage the roster.
It really is. And, with older players especially, you do it. Now, in the inverse situation for Plekanec, if he's been in the lineup for the first couple of games, then you take him out to give him a rest, right? But in his case, I think the longer he sits, the worse it is for him. Much harder for him to get back into the swing of things, just jumping into an NHL game, having not played in a bit. It's a real delicate balance. And one of the things that you look at around the league is, on an average night, If there's eight games in the NHL, so 16 teams playing, there's like 75 guys are healthy scratches.
Gord, you do everything. I mentioned off the top when I introduced you, you're the voice of hockey on TSN, but so much more, right? Well, one thing I've noticed with more and more of the TSN stars doing podcasts, I noticed you don't have one.
I don't, and the sad irony of this is that I'm on a show, Leafs Lunch, that is podcast, available as a podcast. I not only don't do one, I've never downloaded one.
Oh, what you are missing. You've never downloaded the Angry Gallo podcast? You never listened to that?
A friend of mine, who's a very smart guy, sent me a podcast about a political issue. And I had to say to him, not only I have never downloaded a podcast, but the actual podcast app on my iPhone, I delete it to make space. You know what I saw for the first time this week?
What's that?
Fortnite. I'd never seen what it looked like.
Yeah, I'm with you. You're ahead of me right now.
So I'm 53. I've never downloaded a podcast, and I just saw Fortnite for the first time. Like, I'm that old guy that you talk about. Like, pretty soon I'll be yelling at kids to get off my lawn.
Don't embarrass Blair now. No, you don't want to do that.
I was barbecuing in socks and sandals the other day. Like, I'm turning into that guy.
Well, let me leave you with something that
last one's bad, though.
Huh?
That last one's bad. the socks with sandals. Come on. Like, I understand the other two things
around
you've
the
done.
House. Acceptable around the house. I'm sorry.
No, he was outside.
No. Yeah, but
no, it's
the
not
house.
Acceptable in the house. No, yeah, no. What are you wearing socks for in the house with sandals on? Why would you do that?
Sometimes.
But I'm going in and out of the house. I'm going in and out. Right? So it was raining out. So if I keep my shoes on, I track water into the house. This way, I just have those slip on sandals, right? I slip them on, go out, barbecue, come back in, slip them off, walk around, do what I got to do. It's just more efficient.
Strategy to that. Okay, so what did you find here, Joey?
I'm looking for efficiency.
Scott Darling on has a Carey Price story. This will take about 40 seconds.
He was on the Spitting Chicklets podcast.
What is that?
It's a podcast with Paul Bissonnette.
Oh, and, yeah. Biz Nasty.
I think Ryan Whitney's on there, too.
Ryan Whitney and Biz Nasty?
I think so.
All right, here we go. We
had our, like, right before our bye week last year, we played in Montreal. And so I like, stayed and I was flying to, like, Turks and Caicos for the break. And, like, I'm in the airport the next day, like, 6 a.m., and I'm walking to the airport, and I see Carey Price, like, pushing his stuff like he was going somewhere. And I went up to him to, like, say hey, and he thought I was a fan and, like, just, like, brushed me off. And I was like,
no.
Oh, my God. This is the most embarrassing thing. I doubt it, but I was, like, I just stood there in, like, shock and defeat.
Oh, dude.
And I was, like, I don't even want to go to.
Oh, you never even told him, like, bro, I played against you last night.
No, I just put my foot in my mouth and kept walking.
Well,
all right. Yeah, okay. Yes, Gord.
To be fair, what's the closest Carey Price ever would have gotten to Scott Darling?
When he goes to the bench during a timeout,
but Darling also wears a mask.
No, but I was going to say, most of the time he hasn't played against Carey Price. So when Carey Price goes to the bench during a timeout and he's sitting on the complete opposite side of the rink as the backup goalie, that would be it. Or maybe during warm up, right?
Yeah. I mean, two goalies I can see that wouldn't know each other. I totally get that. Now, I mean, you know, I don't know if it's true or not with the story, but Ricky Henderson asking John Olerud why he wore a batting helmet in the field. And Olerud explained that he had an aneurysm when he was in high school, and it's a precautionary measure. And Henderson saying, I played with a guy in New York like that. And Olerud said, yeah, Ricky, that was me. Now, I've heard that story is not. I've heard that story isn't true.
No, I don't want it. I don't want that to be true. Gord, thank you. Thank you for leaving us laughing.
Yeah. I always do.
Pierre Maguire's coming right up. Thank you, Gord. Every Wednesday at 4:35.